I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Moonin, you alright? Nice cup of tea. On Monday, Easter Monday, Angel Monday. Christ has risen yesterday. Okay, it is 8 in the AM, British summertime, on Monday, the 6th of April in the year of our Lord, 2026. You are the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. I pray thee, not one man more do we need from England. You don't want to share the honour with anyone else. The honour that you guys have for tuning in live for the Bow Show, Breakfast with Bow. We don't need any more people because they would steal the honour. There's a finite amount of honour. The more people turn up, the less you get. Breakfast with Bow. The Bow Show, colloquially known as Bow's Breakfast Club, hashtag the real BBC. Or the Lotus Eaters Breakfast Club, hashtag the real LBC. It's the most based breakfast show, by far, by far. Mike Graham, please, please. All right, I'm joined by Harry, my producer, little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Great. Should we get straight into it? I'll talk a little bit about Easter, halfway through the show when we do our poll or something like that, because again, the papers don't, they're not interested in any of that stuff. Corporate mainstream media, not interested in it, talking about that at all. At all. So I'll mention it though. Normal people that experience the world in a normal way. Alright, should we get into it? What are the Fleet Street, what's the papers? What's the British print media banging on about this morning? What are they trying to tell you is or isn't important? What are they lying to you about by omission? Harry, can you bring that up on the screen? There you go. Lovely. High production values here at Lotus Eaters. No expense spared. Trump's expletive-laden tirade and US airman's got gun miracle escape. Like, top gun, got gun. Not a great wordplay. Okay. Trump's expletive-laden tirade. I think he might have deleted it off Truth Social. I had a quick look for it this morning on Truth Social, like, live, in real time, and I didn't see it, but anyway. Obviously, people have saved it and screenshotted it, so we'll have a look at that. All right, The Guardian. Ooh. The Guardian. First thing. Ooh. Too early for that. It's supposed to be a time of a day of remembrance and relaxation and stuff. You don't want to... The Guardian. Ooh. Oh, dear. All right. Trump threatens to unleash hell. On my signal, unleash hell. On Iran in expletive-laden tirade. So, we just get into it. That's a picture. Is that in Tehran or is that in Israel? I can't remember. I think that's it. That's a university in Tehran that's now in rubble. Okay, so Trump, on Truth Social, Trump said, and I'll keep it clean because this is the Bow Show. If you ever watch State of Politics, my other show with Nate History, Mr. H Reviews, Nate, that's uncensored. I don't mind a swear word myself. I think they're quite often funny. If they're dropped at the right place at the right moment, can be very good, I think. But on the Bow Show, we keep it clean, super clean. So I won't tell you the exact words Trump put. But he said on Truth Social, open the effing strait, is what he said. Like directly talking to the Iranians. Open the effing strait, you crazy bees. You crazy bee... studs. You get it. That's what he said. Fair enough, isn't it? I suppose. I mean, it's not very statesmanlike, but it's like their last warning. He said, hasn't he, a number of times. At first, like, he gave them a 48-hour window to open it. And then he said, because there might be peace talks going on, maybe through Pakistan, I'll give you another 10 days. Now that 10 days is up. So this is like, that feels like his last threat, basically. Like your last chance, do it now. Otherwise he'll unleash hell. He'll make their lives a living hell. Or you'll be living in hell, that's what he said. You will be living in hell. You crazy bees. So the other indication is that it will be on Tuesday, 8 p.m. Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern time. 8 p.m. like New York time or whatever. Eastern Standard Time, which is like 1 a.m. British time, for example. So, because he also tweeted that, he just put 8 p.m. Tuesday. So very, very, the wee hours of Wednesday for us Brits. Hell is going to be unleashed. He says something like, he calls it Power Plant and Bridge Day. It's going to blow up all their power plants and bridges. So escalation. No de-escalation. Whether, because it doesn't look like, there's no real, I don't think, real possibility that Iran is going to fold or capitulate to any of this. In fact, if quickly go to, Harry, can you bring up my thing again? Yeah, if I quickly go to, I think, ITV News, their top story. Yeah, so their top story is Iran rejects Trump's foul-mouthed demand to reopen Strait of Hormuz. The essential oil waterway will, quote, never return to its former state, especially for America and Israel, Iran forces have said. So, Iran are unlikely to, like, even though Trump's used the F word and the B word on Truth Social, like, the Iranians are not, they're not going to capitulate to that. It doesn't look like, does it? So, starting 8 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, expect loads more things to blow up in Iran and the whole region, of course. All right, so that was the explosive laden tirade. Okay. Oh, bit of story about Ye. Mr. West, Kanye West. Pepsi drops sponsorship of Kanye West-led event. So there's like a music festival that takes place in London. What is it, the Wireless Festival? I think it's in Hyde Park. Or is it Finsbury Park or Green Park? I think it's Hyde Park. Anyway, every year there's like a relatively large, well, it depends, you know, it's nowhere near the size of Glastonbury or Reading or something, but there's I think 50-odd thousand people go to this, like, Wireless Festival every year in a park in London. And Ye was supposed to be there, or has been booked for it, and Pepsi was, like, the main sponsor. The drink Pepsi, not Pepsi out of Pepsi and Shirley. And they've pulled out because Kanye is a Nazi, remember? He's not, is he? A German National Socialist Workers' Party. Kanye. He did release a song called Heil Hitler, though, didn't he? Didn't he, Harry? Is that right? Because I don't follow Kanye. I don't buy Kanye West's music. Did he, that is right, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The lyrics.
Right. It's what? Oh, okay. Well, there you go. And I do remember he went on someone's podcast. Was it Alex Jones? Maybe. He went on some podcast or other, and he was talking about the Nazis and Hitler and things, wasn't he? I think he had a pop at Nettie. Didn't he come out with like a little net, like a little child? Do I remember this? Is this a crazy fever dream of mine, or did he go on a podcast and have like a little kiddies fishing net and start talking about Netty, meaning Netanyahu, Netty? He did that, didn't he? Harry, do you recall that? Do you know that?
Yeah, he did
some. Okay, yeah, right. But it's all I would have thought it's all performative. He's not actually, you know, I doubt he's like read Mein Kampf. I doubt he's read anything. I doubt he's read Mein Kampf. I doubt he's steeped in the history of the interwar years of Germany. Like, yeah, he knows all about the Freikorps, for example. Yeah, right. It seems all performative to me. I doubt he knows anything of the history and is truly an actual, like, neo-Nazi. Highly doubt it. Anyway, he claims he went on an apology tour, didn't he, a little while ago? Well, not a tour, but he just apologised, saying, oh, I'm really sorry, I was going through... You say his defence was that he was going through some sort of bipolar episode, and he deeply regrets everything he did during that period, and he's sorry. Anyway, that's apparently not enough. Pepsi drops their sponsorship. Loads of people from Keir Starmer, like the Prime Minister's chiming in on this. It's terrible. He shouldn't be allowed in the country, and he shouldn't be allowed to. You shouldn't platform him anymore. Ed Davey jumped on it. Loads of people jumped on it. Of course, like I don't know if it's the actual Board of Deputies or, but various Jewish groups are like all like, yeah, no, cut him out. Don't allow him to perform. You know, shouldn't really. He's just an anti-Semite, and he shouldn't be allowed to perform anymore or something. So, okay. The Kanye West fallout. There you go. That's what happens. All right, let's have a quick keep going. Harry, can you bring in the... Thanks. Okay, what else have we got? The Times, the venerable Times. Pregnancy deaths in the NHS at highest level for 2 decades. That's weird, isn't it? Because we keep giving loads and loads and loads more money to the NHS, keep importing loads and loads and loads of the third world to be our doctors and nurses. And that's a great thing, according to the globalist paradigm. There's no way the NHS could survive without that. And yet, the care people get is getting worse and worse. So you invest hundreds of millions more. So it's billions, investing billions. Endless nurses from Nigeria or wherever, because that's the best thing to do. Pregnancy deaths at the highest for 2 decades. All right. All right. Heaven forbid we could suggest that all these people we've got from the third world to work for the NHS are basically incompetent. Can't say that. That would be racist, wouldn't it? That would just be bigoted. That would be Nazi. May as well be Kanye West. Okay. New Trump deadline to open strait or face hell. President's tirade is US colonel rescued from Iran. Okay, that's the other big story this morning we've got to talk about. The E&E, escape and evasion of a downed F-15 fast jet pilot. Well, it wasn't the pilot, it was it's the two-seater one, isn't it? Strike Eagle F-15. Two dudes in it. One's the pilot. One's like the navigator or the weapons expert dude. And he was on the run in Iran for like a while, like what, 36 hours odd. But then they eventually, both the Iranians and the Americans were trying to capture him, save him, rescue him. Well, the Iranians capture him and the Americans rescue him. And the Americans did rescue him first, just about. There's loads to the story. It's really interesting. We'll talk about it a bit later in a bit more detail, because I think it's a really interesting story. So a bit later, perhaps when we get to the website, so I'll talk about it in more detail. But that's basically, in a nutshell, what happened. A downed pilot. The Iranians nearly got him. Sorry, not pilot. The Iranians nearly got him, but didn't. Okay. All right, and there's the Prince of Wales, William, and his wife, Catherine, and their kids, going to an Easter service yesterday. Kate there looking radiant as ever. All right, the mirror. Radiant Kate. Look, George has grown. Look, George is quite tall now. He should be king one day. You would have thought, right? That kid, King of England. Right. President hits new low, unhinged. This is the media before the MAGA crew. For all the pro-Trump American people, bite my head off. This is the Mirror's words, not mine. Unhinged. He's hit a new low. Trump fires F-word tirade at Iran chiefs. He threatens crazy leaders with living hell. War crimes warning on US missile targets. One thing I will say about the F and the B-word Truth Social post. It's sort of, it is a bit your job, really, isn't it? when you're a leader, even if you're just the CEO of a company, let alone like a national leader, let alone the leader of the free world, isn't it part of your role to keep your cool? Isn't that a big part of it? Like, so, sort of at all times, like you're above losing your cool at all times, aren't you? Not that I personally, but this is just me personally. I don't think that using the odd F-bomb is losing your cool. But a lot of the world do think that, right? A lot of the world are going to say that. The optics of it, people are just going to say that. It's like, you're unhinged, right? Listen to what the Mirror go with. Oh, you used the F-word, right? Unhinged. It's not really, is it? But that's what they're going to say. Oop, he's dropped an F-bomb. He's lost his mind. Anyway, that's what they're going to say, aren't they? But there you go. I do think if you're the president or the prime minister or the chancellor of Germany or whatever it is part of the role to seem above it a lot, all the time, really. So, but that's who Trump is, right? If you haven't got it by now, he shoots from the hip. Right? I've said it a number of times. He's a New York rich kid, property tycoon dude. He's going to drop F-bombs. Right? He takes the mick out of people. He's a wise guy. He's like a New York wise guy, really. You don't know that about Trump yet. He's unhinged. No, he's just being Trump. That's what I think. I think the Mirror, they've got TDS, haven't they? The Mirror's actually, in my opinion, one of the more TDS sufferers of the tabloids. And that's saying something, right? Their TDS seems slightly worse than a lot of the others. Perhaps not as bad as the Metro or something, but all right. The Daily Mail, complete globalist slop, trying to pretend to you that they're not. Trump drops F-bomb on Iran. Now the real bombing can begin. Oh, lovely cup of tea, but that's done now. All right. Move on to my backup water. Trump drops F-bomb on Iran. After dramatic airman rescue, unhinged president issues foul-mouthed ultimatum. See? You know that's what they're going to say. But then Trump's got to appeal to Americans first and foremost, right? Trump shouldn't and doesn't care what editorial line the Daily Mail goes with. If he wants to appeal to Israelis or pro-war Americans, then they're gonna like him getting tough and dropping an F-bomb, aren't they? They're going to be like, yeah, go for it. He cares about that way more than what some writer and editor at the Mirror or the Mail are going to write, doesn't he? David Beckham and Posh Spice there for some reason don't care, okay. The Financial Times. Trump renews Iran threat in bid to reopen Hormuz Strait. Power plants and bridges in US sites. Ultimatum after F-15 airmen rescued. Okay, we'll talk about the airmen thing, I promise you, in a bit. Because I want to do it in a little bit of detail, actually. A little bit. Rather than just mention it in passing. Easter prayers. Tehran residents seek solace in ritual and refuge from daily bombardment. So, yeah, Easter. Talk a tiny bit about Easter now. Shall we? Tiny bit about Easter. Okay, so it's Easter Monday. There you go. There's Radiant Kate and her daughter, Princess Charlotte, going to an Easter ceremony, Easter service, rather. So, because the papers don't talk about it. Just a quick few minutes. Talk about it. It is Easter Monday, right? Okay, well, on Friday, didn't we? Talked about the trial and the passion and the crucifixion. Jesus taken down off the cross like his longina stabs him in the side, which is actually a mercy, right? Some people might think, I remember thinking when I was a kid, oh, that's one last horrible bit of torture and pain for a Roman soldier to stab Jesus in the side. But no, that's a mercy. You'll bleed out quickly and die quickly. Because if you're up there being crucified, it could be days before you die of exposure or hypothermia or suffocation. like suspension trauma, being crucified. The real reality of a crucifixion. A horrifying, terrifying method of execution. Terrifying. You could be up there for days, possibly. So if someone just stabs you and you like bleed out within a few minutes, they're doing you a favour, right? Oh, so anyway, that's Friday, isn't it? They put him in the tomb, roll the big stone across. In fact, some people argue about that stone, whether it was truly like, because quite often it's depicted as like a big, like, round circle thing. But anyway, I won't get into the details of that. He's put in a tomb and it's covered up, and all of Saturday they're just mourning that Jesus of Nazareth is dead. And then on Sunday, they find the stone to the tomb moved and Jesus isn't in there. And if you believe in miracles, he came back to life. I'm afraid I can't. That's one of the main reasons why I can't count myself as a practicing Christian. I was raised Anglican and I totally accept the Christian history and heritage of my country. Said it on Friday, didn't I? I love walking around an abbey or a church or a cathedral. I absolutely love it. Christian art and iconography, love it. The history of it, fascinating. I can't bring myself to believe in miracles. I just can't, if I'm honest. It's just me. Anyway, let's not get into that. Jesus rose from the dead. And then on Monday, an angel comes down and tells them that he's risen from the dead. On Monday, Christ is seen alive again. You know, a couple of the disciples walking along the road. Suddenly some guy sidles up to them. It's only Jesus. It's only bloody Jesus. And on. Jesus walks there for another 40-odd days. You know, people doubt it, like doubting Thomas. But then Jesus is like, look, I'm here, I'm real, you know. You can touch my wound where Long Joanna stabbed me and stuff. And then after 40 days, he does disappear off into the sunset. Literally, sort of, almost. Was it the book of Luke is probably, the Gospel of Luke is probably the best on that, but on all that stuff. So, okay, and this day, Easter Monday, is like continuation. Often it's sort of talked of like that continuation day. It's that not only did Christ come back to life, but he now walks with you continually. Like sometimes you're walking down the road and you don't know that Christ is with you, literally at your side, but he is. That's what they say. That's the whole thing. So, okay. None of that. Easter used to be the most important thing in the calendar, in medieval times, for example, or pre-modern times. Like, Christmas was big, right? But Easter was the main focal point of the year, really. Far more important than Christmas, Easter used to be. And now it's lost it's not as big a thing, is it? We focus more on Christmas and presents and the Christmas tree far more than Easter, don't we? Usually. I mean, it depends what household you're putting, but I mean, it's a general rule. Easter was the big one. Anyway, changing times. I thought I wanted to talk a little bit about Easter, seeing as it's Easter Monday. But okay, all right. Let's move on then. Because the papers don't talk about it. Miliband's net zero drive fails to cut fossil fuels. So the whole thing's a joke, isn't it? The whole thing's pointless. A bad joke, of course. The whole thing's crazily pointless and mental, really. We need to rework our entire economy so that Ed Miliband can feel good about himself that we're not burning many fossil fuels. Don't worry about how many fossil fuels like India or China are burning. Even if we were burning fossil fuels as much as we possibly could, it'd be a drop in the ocean compared to what India and China are doing. Man-made CO2 doesn't drive climate change. I don't believe. Really don't. Okay, we got him. Again, that was a Trump Truth Social. We got him. US airmen rescued in daring raid. Okay. Jobless families handed £6,000 in benefits as tax bomb hits middle class. Yeah, that's There'll be a reworking of the tax rules in various ways in Britain starting, I think it starts today. Like they're scrapping the two-child cap, benefits cap, and people getting benefits will get a bit more than they were before. And of course, taxpayers, or the middle class, have to pay for it all. Or the government just has to borrow more money. They can barely afford to pay the interest repayments on the borrowing they've already done. Okay, I mean, Rachel Reeves doesn't seem to particularly care or understand about any of that. Doesn't seem to. Okay, that's leftist socialist economic theory. Never ever works, never ever adds up. Always ends in misery and penury and ultimately starvation. All right, the sun, Kate looking radiant. Trump hails miracle escape. Got gun. That's poor. Sometimes the puns are funny, I think, right? Sometimes they're funny. Sometimes they're so absurd that they're funny. Sometimes they're just pathetic. I think that one's pathetic. Got gun. Got and top barely rhyme, do they? Got gun. Stupid. Airmen rescued by elite forces. Injured hero hid in rock crevice. Should we talk about it now? I was going to save it for a bit later, but let's talk about all the details of it now, shall we? And one thing I would say here is if in the coming days or weeks or years even, some of the details I'm about to talk about prove to be incorrect, well, I can only apologise. The details are only really emerging now, like the exact details. So if this ages what I'm about to tell you ages poorly, well, so be it. I can only tell you what we know as of the morning of the 6th. All right, so there was an F-50, well, there's two airplanes actually, but the main one, the one we're interested in is an F-15, quite an old fast jet really, an F-15, Strike Eagle. What they like designed, first designed in like the 70s, 1970s, weren't they? And used a lot, well, until this day. Cool jet, by the way. I think F-14s, F-15s, F-16s, they're all really cool looking in my opinion. Super cool. Anyway, F-15 Strike Eagle gets hit. It was flying over southern Iran. Got hit by Iranian missile. And apparently, see, these are the sorts of details that might later prove to be incorrect or just not quite exactly what happened. But anyway, so far we think that the Iranians had some sort of missile system, a new semi kind of advanced one, which the F-15 wasn't able to see or register. Like nothing went off in their cockpit saying, "You're being painted, missile incoming," or anything. They didn't know, it just hit them. Out of nowhere. So, okay, I mean, one way or another, that happened. One way or another, an F-15 got shot out of the sky by the Iranians above the skies of southern Iran. Two people in it, the pilot himself, and then, like, the other dude, the navigator weapons expert dude. And they both eject and survive the initial thing. The pilot gets rescued very quickly by the Americans. But the other guy, he's actually a colonel. I believe he's a colonel. Call sign Dude 44. That was his call sign. Dude 44 is now in the grips of a, you can only imagine, a sort of terrifying E&E experience. Escape and evasion. That's what that is now. You're deep behind enemy lines. All you can do is try to escape and evade. He's only got a pistol. That's all he's armed with. Of course, the Iranians themselves would love to capture him, ideally alive. What a great military and, more importantly, political boon that would be for them. They can then parade him on their TV and say, "Look, the Americans are so weak and stupid. Look, we've got one of their pilots. Look, look, look." It would have been a political nightmare for the Americans on some level. Well, not exactly a nightmare, but I mean, in Vietnam, well, in all sorts of wars, you're going to have downed pilots that get captured by the enemy. I'm surprised that we haven't had more already. I'm surprised it hasn't happened already in this conflict. The amount of fast jet sorties and stuff, not even fast jets, the amount of aeroplanes going over Iran, the fact that some haven't been shot down and captured yet already is remarkable. I can only imagine there's loads of special forces dudes all over Iran, to be quite honest. The fact that none of them have been captured and paraded on Iranian TV yet, quite remarkable. I think the Americans are doing a good job on that front. At some point, it will probably happen. some point it'll probably happen. So, okay, this colonel, dude 44, is on the run inside Iran. Apparently he injured his leg as well. He's got like a wounded leg in some way. And the story is, it's emerging that apparently he and the Iranian countryside is swarming with Iranians trying to find him. And he climbs up some sort of cliff. He like climbed up some mountain or some steep ridge line, like 7,000 foot high ridge line, somewhere in what the Zagros Mountains, I don't know exactly, but. And he finds a little nook, a little crevice in the mountainside, and just hides in there for, like, I think all of Saturday, more or less. And he's got some sort of beacon, some sort of electronic device where he can, you know, let the Americans know where he is, sort of exactly. And apparently they did know kind of where he was, more or less most of the time. But he's deep, deep, deep behind enemy lines. He's in the middle of Iran almost, you know. So, okay, so the race is on for the Americans and the Iranians to try and get him. They both want him really bad. The Americans, no expense spared, to get him. And they launched a massive effort to get him, try and save him. And, you know, no man left behind, all that stuff. And they sent in, some reports were saying, thousands. I think it's either hundreds, high hundreds or low thousands of servicemen were called in to try and save this dude 44. Like SEAL Team 6 were involved in it. I think hundreds of special operators. Well, what they did, the Americans flew in, you know, those big C-130 gunships, they're like the size of an actual airliner, sort of. And they flew in a couple of, there's like a makeshift desert airstrip. And they flew in more than one of those, at least two of those, a whole bunch of helicopters, all sorts of stuff, loads of special forces dudes to try and capture him, okay? And, yeah, he managed to hide for quite a long time, high up on this Iranian mountain ridge. Eventually, long story short, I suppose, he is rescued by the Americans. And then on their way out, either on their way in or on their way out, again, the details are only sort of just emerging, two of those C-130 gunship big airplanes were hit or damaged in some way by Iranian fire. So when Dude 44 and all his rescuers need to just bug out, get home, get safe, they had to blow up a couple of their own, I think the big C-130 airplanes, had to blow them up, and a couple of helicopters as well. Their own helicopters were sort of damaged to the point where they probably wouldn't make it out. So they fly in more aircraft to get everyone out, and the damaged ones that are left there, they blow up themselves to stop the Iranians getting them. Long story short, everyone gets out alive. No American personnel were killed in all of this. Well, quite a remarkable success then, ultimately, from their point of view. So there you go, that's the story. We'll see if any of those details over the coming hours or days or years even prove to be different. But that's what we're being told at the moment. Colonel Dude 44 is safe and well. There we go. Injured hero hid in rock crevice. I wonder if he'll ever write a book. All right, Harry, shall we... There you go, thanks. Just say I'm interested in all sorts of special forces raids on epochs of the Lotus Eaters. Harry? Oh. My history theme show behind the paywall on lotuseaters.com. Considering, do consider becoming a Bronze Tier membership for as little as £5 a month. There, I've got all sorts of history theme content just about special forces raids. I did one on like St. Nevers. Did one on the Iranian embassy siege. Did one on when the Nazis rescued Mussolini from that Italian mountaintop. Did one all about the SEALs in Vietnam in 1967. I'm going to do more in the future. The various stories of in World War II and Vietnam of downed pilots all over the place. and their stories of escape and evasion. Like later we might talk about, there's an article on the Daily Mail might mention, talk about famous Bat 21, an American pilot in Vietnam, shot down over South Vietnam. They made a film about it with Gene Hackman, if you've ever seen that. But a true story. Guy spent 11 days doing an escape and evasion real life exercise. But he eventually was successfully rescued. There's loads of stories like from World War II. You're not always downed in, or you might be downed deep behind enemy lines in enemy territory, but you're not necessarily sort of immediately fleeing from the enemy. Like you might be downed in like the Philippines or something, and you don't have to necessarily worry about Japanese soldiers or something. You just have to survive in the jungles. You're in the middle of nowhere. You just have to survive in the jungles now. It might be that. Endless stories of, not endless, but quite a lot of stories like that. As a history nerd and a military history fan, I'm only a fan of history. Fascinated by all that stuff. Fascinated by all that stuff. I wonder if this guy will ever write a book. I'd read it if he did. Or someone else writes a book about it anyway. Okay, shall we move on? The Daily Express, it's a good paper. Being sarcastic there, it's not a good paper, is it? It's ridiculous. It's kind of a ridiculous rag. Okay, there's Kate looking radiant. Two future kings. There. All right. Survivor hits out at the Crown Prosecution Service over decisions it took. Vile betrayal of grooming gang victim. Yeah. So this one particular grooming gang survivor, who said she was sexually assaulted or raped by a Pakistanis between the ages of 12 and 15, repeatedly, multiple times a week. They'd get her blackout drunk, threaten her with a gun if she said anything. The time when our Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, was head of the CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service. The Crown Prosecution Service did not seem interested in prosecuting these people at the time. She talks of the vile betrayal of grooming gang victims. Yeah. And to this day, they're extremely reticent, aren't they? Extremely reticent about getting to the bottom of it. Put Jess Phillips in charge of it and make it about a general purpose inquiry into sexual crime. Really? Really? Rupert Lowe do an inquiry about it. Pour cold water on that. Play that down. Don't talk about that. Or even ridicule it. Yeah. A vile betrayal. Yeah. Yeah. Can't talk about that they're Pakistanis. That would be racist. I mean, it is. That's literally in on the front page there. A group of Pakistanis. Government not interested in that. Keir Starmer not interested in that story, that narrative. Shedding any real light on that, getting to the bottom of it. A full hangout, rip the band-aid off, rip the plaster off. Let's look at it properly. No, no, that would be racist. The Star, Leeds win classic, Cup Classic. I support West Ham United Football Club, don't I? Leeds beat them on penalties yesterday in the FA Cup quarter-final. Oh well, oh well. Bookies preparing for a big bashing. £1 billion betting bonanza. Just to say, there's the Grand National, I think next weekend. I think next Saturday is the Grand National. The biggest horse meet, biggest horse race of the year, of course, the Grand National. And despite everything that's going on in the world, the Daily Star talks about that lots of people are going to bet money on that. That's news. That's the front page news, according to the Star. That the Grand National is going to happen and that people bet money on that. Wow. Wow. Thanks for that, the Star. Okay, they're the front pages. They're the increasingly absurd front pages. Let's look at our poll. What poll did we do? I can't even remember what poll we did, Harry. I always forget in that first half hour, 40 minutes, what we said. Okay, we asked you guys, will Trump's new offensive succeed in opening the Strait of Hormuz? 27% of you say yes, 49% of you say no, and a big chunk, 25% of you say maybe. I mean, again, it's one of those polls, isn't it? It's one of those days where the real answer, the correct answer, is a maybe. We don't know, do we? No one knows. If I was honest with myself and I was taking that poll, I probably would have clicked maybe. not to deliberately sit on the fence, not because I haven't got a clue, but because it is a maybe. Still, the no's win it, right? The no's win it. 49% say no. That'd probably be my second choice, is a no. It doesn't look like Iran, unless the regime completely collapses, which could happen any day, any hour. But if it doesn't, and I suspect it doesn't, I say if it collapses any day, any moment, I don't think it probably will now at this point, but if it did, then it'd be a yes, but I suspect not at this point. So the no's win it. The no's win it with 40, just click down to 49%. Okay, nearly 1,000 votes. All right, there you go. I did see Trump, I think about 3 days ago, do an address to the nation and the world. And in it he said, almost in passing, he said, "We never talked about regime change." It's like, no, you did, dude, you did. You did. In that first 8-minute little video you did from Mar-a-Lago on that Saturday morning when the war started, like 4 or 5 weeks ago now, you definitely did. All right. But then he says 3 days ago, "We never talked about regime change." You did. That's the thing I think most normal people resent most about politics and politicians, is when they try and tell you your own memory is wrong. Like Big Brother. Like George Orwell's Big Brother. What you remember, what you saw and heard with your own eyes and ears, that was wrong. You didn't. Normal people hate being treated like that. They hate it. They hate it. You'd rather that a politician was honest and it makes them look bad, that they got something wrong, than that. I personally much more respect a politician who said, "I said something a few weeks ago, or 2 years ago, or 10 years ago. I was wrong. I've changed my mind. I now think this. My position is now this, which might be 180 to the thing I said before, but things have changed. I've changed. My thinking has changed. Reality in events have changed things." Rather than pretend you didn't say what you said. "No, I didn't say that. Or you misunderstood what I said when I said that." No, don't do that. Please. It's embarrassing for both of us to do that. Don't do that. All right. Let's have a look at the websites. Harry, can you bring up my thing? Okay, let's have a look at the websites. BBC. What have we got? Oh, yeah, Artemis. Artemis, the 40 minutes when Artemis crew loses contact with the Earth. So that's tonight. British time, anyway. It's nearly about midnight. British summer time. The Apollo 2 capsule. Oh, sorry, Apollo. The Artemis 2 capsule will be going round the dark side of the moon, if you believe it's real, which of course I do. We'll lose contact, radio silence, radio contact for like 40 odd minutes while they go round the dark side of the moon. The furthest humans will have ever been from Earth, setting the new record, a new altitude record, effectively, right, in a way. And we hopefully will get a cool new 2026 vintage Earthrise. That is, when you come out from the dark side of the moon, you will see the Earth rising above the lunar surface, like a sunrise, but it's Earthrise, right? The classic Apollo 8 image of that is iconic, isn't it? And we'll get a super HD, brand new HD version of that. Should be good. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to how the space deniers and flat earthers are gonna, how they're gonna spin it. How it's not real. They'll find one pixel out of place. It's not real. There you go. All right. So yeah, that's tonight. Again, about midnight British time. That will be happening. Okay. All right. What else have we got? Let's have a quick look. Let's just jump ahead to, was there something on Sky News going with quite a bit of space stuff? loads of moon mission things, loads of moon mission stories. On the Daily Mail, there was one interesting story, I thought, just to build on the downed pilot Dude 44 and his escape and evasion ordeal. Let's see if I can quickly find... There we go, here's the story here. Oh, it was a big gamble. They're saying it's a big gamble. I suppose it is. It always is. Because you might just lose the special operators and the pilots that go in to rescue you, Dude 44. They could just get killed or captured themselves, right? It could be a self-perpetuating cycle of fail if you're not careful. I think this is the scene where, look, the Americans had to blow up their own helicopters and transport aircraft that got damaged. So the Americans themselves blew it up to prevent it from falling into the hands of the Iranians. All right, and in this article, they talk about just a small number of other historic examples of such things. Daring do behind enemy lines. They talk of that Scott O'Grady in Bosnia in 1995. That's the dude they had. There's that Owen Wilson film, isn't there? Well, I've seen that Owen Wilson film. What's it actually called? I can't remember what the film's called, but I've seen it a couple of times. Is it just called Behind Enemy Lines? Is that what it's called? Anyway, that's a true story. That's the true dude. Scott O'Grady, a US pilot. Yep, interesting, fascinating film. Oh yeah, Bat 21. I mentioned Bat 21, didn't I? In Vietnam. He was an older gentleman, wasn't he? Yeah, he's 53. He was 53. And he was hit at 28,000 feet. Took him 16 minutes to parachute to the ground. Anyway, yeah, survived behind enemy... Yeah. Survived behind enemy lines for like 11 days, something like 11 days. And there was a giant rescue mission to save him, rescue him, and they did. Many, many such cases, loads in World War II. Bravo 2-0. Don't really get... So I know Bravo 2-0 inside out. I've read Andy McNab's account of Bravo 2-0 like a weird number of times. Was a little bit obsessed with it when I was like a young teenager, when I was like 14 or whatever. Reread it, reread bits of it like multiple times. Some of it may not be perfectly accurate. But they weren't rescued. Chris Ryan was the only one that got away. I mean, he writes a book called The One That Got Away. So Chris Ryan rescued himself by just walking to Syria. A remarkable feat of human endurance. Absolutely superhuman, insane escape and evasion story, Chris Ryan. But Andy McNab and, like, what, three of them were killed in action. Chris Ryan gets away, and the other four, is it? The other four are captured, including Andy McNab himself. And spend time in Iraqi prisons until they're eventually released at the end of the first Gulf War. Yeah, there they are. There's a picture of them. Three dudes whose faces aren't blacked out because they didn't survive. Legs laying there. Oh, anyway. Okay. I don't know why they've included this in sort of rescue mission, an article about rescue missions. No one was rescued. Chris Ryan rescued himself. So, okay, all right. Operation Barrah, Sierra Leone, brilliant story. That's the Brits again in Sierra Leone. Bunch of soldiers got surrounded and captured in Sierra Leone, held by just like Sierra Leone rebels in the jungle. We mount a rescue mission. Classic. Got them all home. Did we get them all home? Nearly all of them anyway. Classic story. Brilliant story. An Afghanistan one where they were trying to just retrieve the body. There was some Lance Corporal chap. Oh yeah, Matthew Ford had been killed in action. And some Marines, British Marines, strapped themselves to the outside of an Apache helicopter gunship. Flew in to get his remains out. Crazy story. Amazing story. Entebbe, it's an Israeli one. It's like an aeroplane hijacked, flew to Uganda. EDR means Uganda. Like over 100 people on board, civilians and stuff. the Israelis send special forces chaps to the airstrip in Uganda and rescue nearly all of them. I think two or three or four of them were killed, but they rescued nearly all of them. So again, sort of an example of a near perfect special forces rescue. That is more like, basically more like a rescue or hostage situation anyway. Benjamin Netanyahu's older brother was killed in that. The Israeli special forces chaps only lost one dude, and it was Bibi's older brother. All right. Interesting, though. Again, if you're a history, military, or any sort of history nerd, special forces operations and raids, fascinating. Like the Sun's leading with it. The greatest escape. The best escape. The greatest escape. American escape. Yeah. This dude, people were shoplifting in Waitrose. He worked in Waitrose. People were stealing Easter eggs. He confronted them or even tackled one. He gets sacked. All right. Waitrose just want people to steal from them, do they? Okay. Something about Andrew and Edward. Do not care. Kate looking radiant again. Look, giant mobs of black and brown kids going absolutely berserk. And cops trying to deal with it. Are we not allowed to notice that they're all near 99% black and brown kids? We're not allowed to notice that. We're just going to call them feral youths, hooded youths. That they're barbarians, that they're at odds with civilization. If you go around in giant mobs, smashing things up, stealing everything you can get, and just relying on the fact that there's not enough police, that's sort of at odds with civilization itself, isn't it? With the rule of law itself. With law and order doing that. Just safety in numbers. Just safety in a giant mob. Or go around causing criminal damage and theft on a giant scale. And if anyone tries to stop you, though, you'll smash them up as well. Great. Brilliant. That's Britain now. That's the Britain we live in now. They do that. Lucy Letby worried she's going to get killed in prison. Okay. Some squatter, eccentric squatter is living on the front porch of a £200 million townhouse in London. Okay, all right. Let's just move on. Okay, it's getting knocking 10-2. Shall we just have a look? Oh, there's one thing in Le Monde I thought we'd look at. Le Monde. The French newspaper. Top story on Le Monde says, on immigration, Spain moves against the tide of its European neighbours. Says, citing economic and moral arguments, Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez's socialist government is preparing to grant legal status to 500,000 undocumented workers, most from Latin America. The plan brings hope to 840,000 foreign nationals living without papers in Spain. They'll make their way across the Pyrenees into Calais if they want now. Well, if and when they get documentation. Or even before that. Let alone... How can the Spanish people be voting for this? Is that what they wanted when they voted in their socialist government? Sanchez's socialist government? Is that what they really wanted? They wanted something like close to knocking 1 million foreign nationals living in Spain just to be given Spanish citizenship and the right to remain. Is that really what they wanted? I mean, if it is, it's suicidal, isn't it? It's suicidal. And damages the rest of Europe as well, of course, ultimately. A socialism for you. They mean to destroy your country, wherever you are. They want to destroy it. Be in no doubt. All right, let's have a look at this day in history. What happened on this day in history? Down through the centuries, what happened of note? Should we have a look? 6th of April. Nothing about the resurrection of Christ or the continuation or anything like that, because the sort of liturgical dates aren't set in stone, right? Easter week, Holy Week, moves around depending on various things. It's not always the same day. So that's why it's not included here. But okay, let's have a look. On this day in 46 BC, Battle of Thapsus. That's when Julius Caesar defeats Metellus Scipio, not to be confused with any of the other Scipios, Metellus Scipio and Cato, Cato the Younger. Battle of Thapsus, big one. It's not the complete end of Caesar's civil wars, but it's very nearly. He's largely got it done after Thapsus. I mean, Harry? What's the betting? Do you think I've got long-form content all about the career of Julius Caesar and the life and career of Cato the Younger on Epochs? Do you think I have? You bet your sweet ass I have. I think some of my best content, among my best content out of 200, knocking 260-odd videos now, all long-form, hundreds of hours of content, some of my best ones I did, I think it was a three-part series on Cato, Cato the Younger. Those three videos are among my best ones, I think. I think the story of Cato the Younger is absolutely fascinating. He might be my favourite character from the age of Caesar and Pompey. He's infuriating and brilliant all at the same time, Cato the Younger. Love it. So I actually talk about the Battle of Thapsus more than once on Epochs. I mean, I've got a load of stuff on Pompey as well. So certainly in the Caesar one, got a giant series on Caesar. What was it, 15 part, 20 part, 30 part? I can't remember. Stupid number of episodes just about Caesar. So I'll talk about the Battle of Thapsus there. And, of course, the Cato one. Because Cato loses, isn't killed on the battlefield, retreats back to the city, and then kills himself, commits suicide. So Caesar can't grant him clemency. So that's the end of Cato the Younger after the Battle of Thapsus. That was his last chance. His side needed to win that, and they didn't. All right. Okay, could talk all about that on and on. Harry, can you bring up? There you go, thanks. Okay, on this day in 1453, Turkish forces under Sultan Mehmed II, Mehmed the Conqueror, begin the siege of Byzantine Empire's capital, Constantinople, now Istanbul, which falls on May the 29th. The Ottomans have been trying to take Istanbul for centuries. Centuries. And always failed. Because the walls, the Theodosian walls, were just a bit too good. People say walls don't work in a number of ways, physically, militarily, and politically. They do. They nearly always do. They're really good. If your walls are good enough, they'll keep you safe for centuries. Well, in the pre-modern age, anyway. Mehmed brings up some massive guns. Massive, massive guns. And anyway, eventually it does fall. But we talked about it before, didn't we? Week or so ago. 1453, giant turning point in history. There's various things to anchor in your mind when you're trying to learn history, trying to get a chronology of everything that went on. There's various anchor points, right? 1588, the Spanish Armada, or 1945, the end of World War II, or whatever it is. 1453 is a big one. Did something happen in the Middle Ages? Which side of 1453 does it fall? And you can start piecing together things in your mind. Okay. Giant turning point in history, where Mehmed the Conqueror eventually takes Constantinople, ending the Byzantine Empire. Okay, on this day in 1652, the Cape Colony, the first European settlement in South Africa, is established by the Dutch East India Company. There you go. That's why there's such a big sort of Dutch influence in, or was, in South Africa. Because they actually got there first. There you go. Okay. On this day in 1917, the United States declares war on Germany and enters World War I on the side of the Allies. So we talked a bit about that the other day as well, didn't we? Like that Mexican communique. Remember we were talking all about that? Where the Germans said to Mexico, look, come into the war on our side and we'll help you reconquer places like Texas and Arizona, parts of the United States which used to belong to Mexico. It's like a while ago. It was like 70 odd years before that, but I mean just about within living memory, not really within living memory, I would say. But the British intercepted that communique and just immediately told the Americans And that swayed American opinion, apparently. Woodrow Wilson was like, right, that's the final straw. We're getting involved in World War One now. All right. On this day in 1994, a plane carrying the Rwandan president and the Burundian president is shot down by a surface-to-air missile. Pardon me. A surface-to-air missile. I do beg your pardon. Made my eyes water that. Pardon me. The Rwandan president and the Burundian president are shot down by a surface-to-air missile, abruptly ending negotiations, peace negotiations, and sparking the Rwandan genocide. Those responsible were never identified. The Rwandan genocide. Crazy, crazy thing. I remember going, years ago now, probably 15, 20 years ago, deciding at one point, I need to know exactly what happened there. I need to know the details of exactly the chronology, what happened in what order, who did what and said what, who didn't do what, how it all went down. Long, complicated story, can't go into it here, just simply haven't got time, but very, very dark. Of course, stating the obvious there, very, very dark, but... Well, where to begin? I just can't go into it here. It's not a history show, but okay. One of the spark points was that aeroplane was shot down. That was sort of, a lot of people say that was sort of the final. It had been bubbling away for years. And in the months leading up to it, sort of coming, simmering up, coming to the boil, a rolling boil. And then that happened, and it happened, the genocide happens. Crazy thing. All right, okay. Should we have a look at our Rumble Rants and Super Chats? Should we do that, Harry? All right, let's have a look. What have we got? Monday the 6th of April, we've got our Rumble Rants. We always do the Rumble Rants first, don't we? All right, what have we got? Global Church History, in at number one. Reigning, defending, undisputed champion of Bosho Super Chats. Or Rumble Rants, rather. Global Church History says, on this day... In 1320, the Declaration of Arbroath is signed. That's when the Scottish barons and magnates appeal to the Pope, isn't it? To say, we're our own thing. Scotland's its own thing. 1320, so that's going to be the age of Edward II. Edward II, is it? Must be, I think. Yeah, the Declaration of Arbroath. Scotland, because everyone was still Catholic back then. There'd been no Protestant Reformation or anything. So the Scottish saying, hey, the Pope, recognise us as our own sovereign thing, please. Okay, where else did you say? In 1722, Jacob Roggeveen discovers Easter Island. That's interesting. The story of Easter Island, again, a fascinating thing. When Europeans first went there, The people on Easter Island descended from the native peoples of the Pacific Islands. Somehow they'd got to Easter Island, which is fantastically remote, tiny, tiny speck of land in the Western Pacific Ocean. Crazy that when Europeans got there was anyone there. It's crazy that it wasn't uninhabited, but it wasn't. People went there, found it. Briefly, it was just like, oh, this is a thing. Okay. Moved on. Nobody went back there for quite a while, like a generation, or quite a few years anyway. No one returned. Europeans returned, I mean. And then when they did, they'd found that the entire culture that was there had sort of imploded and destroyed itself in various ways and changed their religion and culture in loads of ways. Because that first landing sort of blew their mind. They thought they were the only people in the world. They thought their little Easter Island was the only bit of land in the world. They'd lost contact with the rest of the Pacific Islanders because Easter Island's that remote. They thought they were the only people in the world. And it blew their mind when they realised they weren't. And in fact, they were way behind in terms of technology and stuff. It blew their mind. Their whole ancestor worship culture seems to have suffered a big hit. They started doing some Birdman culture thing instead. Anyway, again, can't talk about it here. The story of Easter Island, absolutely fascinating. I love it. In fact, I need to brush up on it. It's been a few years since I brushed up on all the details of it. Okay, all right. I'd love to go there myself. It's difficult to get to, though, really difficult. You have to basically probably go to Chile and then charter a plane or something. It's expensive and very difficult to get to, but I'd love to visit it. All right. Oh, you also say on this day was the first abdication of Napoleon I, the Napoleon Bonaparte, in 1814. Because, of course, we had to make him abdicate twice, didn't we? The first time, the Russians get to Paris, he abdicates, we put him on Elba, he escapes from Elba, has another whole campaign, 100 days, eventually defeated at Waterloo, and then sent to Helena, forced to abdicate for a second time, sent to St. Helena, where he never escaped from there. All right. Interesting. Thanks, Global Church History. Nearly always, if not always, brilliant Rumble Rant or Super Chat you send in. Really appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Fortean Barber says, morning, Bo. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. Yeah, it was good. Thank you. It was great. I did until I saw more solar panels on good farmland. I did see we're going to pull out some gas, but that's not oil. We need that more. Okay. I mean, yeah, Britain needs to start drilling, baby, drill. Drill, baby, drill. We need to use the North Sea reserves, don't we? It's obviously our way out of this. Few countries have even got an option to do something like that. The fact that we've got that option and aren't doing it is bizarre. Thanks for the super chat, though, for Tim Barber. Fallen Firebird says, well met, Bo. I've been unable to do much lately because of a muscle tear strain in my shoulder. Oh, sorry to hear that. Oh, sorry to hear that. Hope you get better soon. Plenty of rest. That's all you can do, right? I've had strains and muscle tears before. You've just got to rest it for ages. Okay. It's very demoralising. Yeah, yeah, I know. Yeah, God, I feel for you. I feel for you. Chin up, though. Chin up. You should get better. You will get better. But Epox and your other stuff is getting me through it. Cheers, my brother. Oh, cheers. If I can help in any small way, in any tiny, tiny respect, great. Yeah, there's tons of Epox in there. Hours and hours and hours. A couple of hundred, probably over 300 hours. Well, it will be over 300 hours of me talking about history. If that helps you in any small way, my friend, it's my pleasure. Just rest. There's nothing else you can do, is there, for a muscle tear? You've just got to let it heal on its own. Okay, best of luck. Best of luck to you. For Tea and Barber, last Rumble Rant says, Oh, I forgot. Have you read Josephus, who wrote briefly about Jesus? I've read bits of Josephus. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have to. It's ancient, because I did ancient history as an undergrad. They're going to give you passages from Josephus that you've got to read. If you don't include the Gospels as sort of firm history, some do, some don't. I mean, even the earliest one. Is it Mark is the earliest Gospel? I can't remember. Anyway, they're all a fair bit after the age of Jesus is supposed to have lived. I think the earliest Gospel is something like 80 years after the age of Jesus. And then mostly 100 or more years after. So it's not like the... Okay, historians, historiography, the study of history itself, say that the Gospels are slightly shaky as a true historical source. Others completely disagree with that and say there's just everything in them is perfectly accurate. Okay, if you don't include the Gospels, then what evidence is there of Jesus? Well, you've got bits of the odd bit from the Romans, and you've got Josephus. So it seems like I'm one of those people. I think Jesus was a historical figure. Some people argue he wasn't. Some people say he's entirely fictional. I don't think so. I think the preponderance of evidence is that there was somebody in Judea at that time. Whether it's exactly as described in the Gospels, who knows? But some argue he's not real at all. I think he almost certainly was. I think he almost certainly was. Well, anyway, the historicity of Jesus, that's a whole thing. That's a whole discipline. People arguing over the real, real historical facts of Jesus of Nazareth's life. One end of the spectrum, everything that's in the Gospels, even though the four Gospels don't agree on everything, that's all 100% historical fact. And others, Jesus is a complete fiction. I'm somewhere in between myself, but there you go. Okay, yeah, Josephus, you have to read a bit of Josephus if you're going to be if you're going to be into ancient history. Can't avoid it. All right, interesting to me. I'd like to chat to, I'm going to do a chat soon with Metatron, a great history YouTuber. That is going to happen, hopefully, fingers crossed. We've been in contact. We're working it out. I believe he's just welcomed a new baby into the world. So obviously that takes priority over little old me. I wouldn't mind discussing, because he's a Christian, Italian or Sicilian Christian man. And he's talked about the historicity of Jesus before. Like the real, real reality of the real life of the historical figure, Jesus of Nazareth. He's talked about that before. I wouldn't mind picking his brain, at least for a while, about that. Like, what do you think about this? Like, what do you think about this passage from Josephus? What do you think about this brief mention somewhere else in Tacitus or something? Or not Tacitus, I don't think Tacitus mentions Jesus. Anyway. All right, let's move on. Could chat about the historicity of Christ all day. What have we got here? It's the Super Chats, YouTube Super Chats. We've got Abdullah Shiraj says, what does the Talmud say about Jesus? What does the Talmud say about you? Just going to move on from that. I don't know what the hell you're going on about there. I don't know. What are you trying to do? What are you trying to say? Ugh. Okay. Imasonite says, on the balancing scales of monarchist versus republican, where do you sit? Rupert's spirit animal is Cromwell. Do you see us moving in that direction? Well, I've said before, I'll say it again, I'm a very lukewarm monarchist. I like the history and the tradition of our constitutional monarchy. I think the concept and the institution of monarchy has served us very well. I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not a republican, although I'm not a strong monarchist. Like, I don't like King Charles. I wasn't a big fan of Queen Elizabeth II even. You can dislike the actual person of the sovereign, but still be a monarchist. So I'm a very, very lukewarm monarchist. The fact that commies and socialists hate the monarchy makes me want to preserve it for all time. The fact that our modern constitutional monarchs have very, very little power, very, very little power, that sits well with me. I like that. I don't like the idea of having an absolute monarch, an all-powerful king, because they may or may not be stupid or mad or something. So that's not ideal. I do like having a constitutional monarchy. I mean, if there was Bose Britain, if I found myself like complete autocrat of Britain, and I could just do away with the monarchy if I wanted to, I wouldn't. I don't think I would. But Britain did flourish in various ways under Cromwell's Republic. In various ways, we were made stronger. Lots of people don't like to accept that. Lots of people hate Cromwell, but I don't. Okay. Moomin UK. Love the Moomins. Moomin UK says, millions must go. Yeah, aim high, vote low. Millions must go from Zoomers to Boomers. Quite right. Okay, and the last one today, only a few super chats today. FMK says, I love your studio, Bo. It reminds me of the goodies. Good vibes. The goodies. Did I mention Bill Oddie the other day? The goodies. There's a blast from plus. Oh, thanks. Yeah, it actually cost quite a lot to make the studio, to be perfectly honest. This video wall cost an absolute bomb. Right at the beginning of Lotus Eaters, or right near the beginning of Lotus Eaters, or when we changed studios. Remember that woman Carl sued? Kayla, obviously. She tried to sue Carl. She said he'd like stolen her content and misused it in some way. Failed. She failed. It was thrown out of court because she doesn't know what she's doing or talking about. And Carl like did some sort of counter suit against her for like wrongly bringing a suit against him in the first place. And he won that. Because she didn't have a clue what she was doing or talking about. Someone had convinced her she could get a bit of money out of some British fascist. Completely mistaken on every possible level, love. Carl won a few tens of thousands of pounds out of that. Pumped it straight back into this video wall, basically. So thanks, Akilah. What is it? Akilah Hughes, is it? I think that was her name. I can't even remember. Cheers, Akilah. You paid for this. Quite literally. Quite literally. So cheers for that. All right. All right. That's the show. That's the last Super Chat today. That's the show. It's just ticked 15 minutes past 9, British summertime, on Monday, the 6th of April, in the year of our Lord, 2026. You've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for tuning in. Without you, it's really not a thing, is it? It's just me chatting into the void if you guys don't turn up and watch it. So thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Try and make the best of the day ahead. It's a bank holiday, isn't it? So hopefully most of you aren't working. Some of you will be still, won't you? But hopefully a lot of you won't be working. Try and do something valuable with your time if you can. You know, it's not always easy, but if you can, it's a bank holiday. Your time is the most valuable thing you've got. Far more valuable than any actual physical possessions you've got. Far more valuable. Your time, you'll never get it back. You'll never get it back. It's later than you think. Carpe diem, seize the day if you can. Okay, with that, I'll see you tomorrow morning. Take care.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.